right. Good morning, everybody. Today is Monday, June 15th, 2015. And this is Before the First Cup with Jules here on UCY.TV. Happy Monday, everybody. It's actually a kind of chilly morning here in upstate New York. Hold on one second. We're going to find out what the temperature is. It's wet. It was actually a pretty wet and humid weekend, but it's kind of cold, but I'm not sure if it's because I'm in air conditioning or not. I did not go outside. Oh, well, not bad. 67 degrees and overcast. It's supposed to be pretty nice all week. So where did we leave off on Friday? It was a pretty busy weekend here for anyone who hung out at UCY this weekend. You know that it was like nonstop new live shows this weekend, Saturday through Sunday. It was pretty mind-boggling. We had a brand new show start Sunday at noon Eastern time with Ron Stevens called Game On. So that was great. That's noon to 2 Eastern. And we ran a second brand new show that was in the second week, Voice of Rebellion Radio, with Chris J and El Suarez on Sunday nights at 9 p.m. Eastern, 9 to 11. So that was great. But it kept me very busy this weekend, so I never really got any downtime. So let's see. Where do we leave off on Friday? We titled the show Hackers and Outbreaks Under Every Bed, because that seems to be what the buzzwords are lately. We've been taking a look at some of the never-before-seen diseases that have been cropping up all over, and of course the anthrax story, which I did find an update on that. If you give me just a second here, sorry, it's Monday. You guys know I came running out here and went to click my light on and get everything connected, and my light bulb blew to boot, so it's kind of dark in here right now. But it's all right. I'll live. But I did start preparing a bunch of stories, and there was an update on that DARPA story with the anthrax that's been sent all over, the planet. Originally, oh, look, I didn't post it here. Originally, it had been from 2006, they said, and we had postulated that it probably was way before 2006. And the reason why I say that is because the entire process with deactivating anthrax, they believe, has been faulty from the very beginning. I think originally they started, God, this is Monday is so hard for my brain. I think originally it was like 19 states and some odd locations, and then, you know, a couple days later, they trickled out some more info. Well, now, it was two, the United States had like maybe 28 labs. I don't know. Don't quote me, but it's gone up and up and up. It was originally two countries. Then it became three countries, South Korea, Australia, and Canada. I saw now it's up to four countries, South Korea, Australia, Canada, and the UK. And it's up to 69 laboratories in 19 states since at least 2004, it said. And check this out, the CDC. So, of course, too, that was the other thing. The year before, and we discussed this as well, the year before this happened with the DOD and this wanton shipping of live anthrax everywhere, the CDC had a very similar situation where they're shipping out anthrax in baggies all over the place thinking that it was killed. Ends up that it wasn't killed. And the most amazing part about this is it even went up in front of a Senate subcommittee hearing with the head of the CDC going, hey, we don't know how this happened, but we're going to have to change all of our procedures to make sure that this never happens again and put out some guidelines. Well, apparently a whole year later, nothing ever changed. So the DOD did the exact same thing. Well, now apparently the CDC is investigating the DOD's breach. And it says the CDC finds live anthrax in all, yes, I talked about this Friday, but it gets even better, all test samples shipped by the military, orders labs to destroy the remaining lots. Well, that brings up a good question. If your destruction process that you were using as the standard across the board doesn't work, how are you going to destroy them? Well, let's read this anyway and see what garbage they're feeding us today. The Center for Disease Control and Prevention now believes that there was live anthrax in all of the samples mistakenly sent by the U.S. military to 69 laboratories in 19 states, the District of Columbia, and in 5 countries. Yes, all that there was live anthrax in all of the samples. Like, I can't even get over it. It has instructed the labs to destroy any remaining anthrax still in their possession. CDC found low levels of live anthrax in all 22 samples it had received from affected laboratories. The samples were all from labs that had received supposedly inactivated material from the Army Proving Ground in Dugway, Utah. Quote, "We are assuming any samples that were derived from lots prepared at Dugway contain live material," said the CDC spokesman Jason McDonald. "There is no need to test those samples any further." Isn't that the way they always do it? "The priority is now to secure the samples and destroy the material." So they're not even going to test anymore. They're basically saying, yep, oops, it's all live. We shipped it all over the planet. This bioterror pathogen that we've been warning you about since 2001 that the terrorists are going to get their hands on. Yeah, well, whoops, don't worry about it. Only one grain can be used to cultivate a whole new petri dish of anthrax that you can use to kill people, but don't worry because we're certain that everybody is safe and there's nothing to be afraid of. According to the CDC, they have instructed any laboratories that may have received anthrax samples between 2004 and 2015 to destroy their existing samples. Quote, "If the labs are able..." This is the key word. "Destroy the samples in accordance with standards procedures." But wait, wasn't it the standards procedure that was faulty in the first place? "Destroy the samples in accordance with the standard procedures and with an approved method." I don't know what that means. I mean, the approved method was x-rays and or gamma rays, and apparently that didn't work. "The destruction must be completed within 7 days and evidence of the destruction provided to the CDC." How ridiculous is this? I mean, the fact that it was supposed to have been destroyed to begin with before they shipped it out using these standard procedures, and now they're telling them to use the standard procedures if they're able. And I had read another story. One of the issues is that some of the labs that they were shipping this stuff to didn't have equipment to irradiate the killed, or to kill, to irradiate the anthrax to kill it. Some were using like this chemical destruction process, but it wasn't really clear to me how they were doing that or how many of these labs were using this chemical procedure. Anyway, so they have to provide evidence of destruction to the CDC and complete it within 7 days if they are able. If the lab is unable to destroy their samples on their own, they are to be transferred to a more capable, quote, select agent registered site, unquote, that can handle and destroy the spores. The CDC and who? The FBI will assist with the transfer. A third option would be for labs classified as select agents registered entity to register their sample with the federal select agent program and retain it. Yeah, because they were shipping all this stuff out and they're still not really sure all the places that that live anthrax possibly could have gone. I mean, talk about keeping you safe, people. This just is the cherry on top. Meanwhile, the military continues to test the more than 400 lots of supposedly dead anthrax it keeps at 4 military facilities. Some 11 of 91 lots have so far tested positive for anthrax, and all of those are from the Dugway facility. Tracing the distribution path of those lots to laboratories has led to the increasing number of affected laboratories that may have received the live anthrax, and on Friday, Pentagon spokesman Colonel Steve Warren announced that a shipment of possibly live anthrax had also been sent to where? Japan. So that would be country number 6, I believe. Is it 6 or 5? Hold on, let's count. It's Monday. Canada, Australia, South Korea, USO, or US, UKO, and yes, number 5, sorry, Japan. He said that that sample was destroyed in 2009. Glad we know that. Pentagon officials stressed that there's no threat at all to the general public from the shipments of live anthrax, pointing to the secure packaging of samples that were sent by FedEx. Yes. Wait, what did the girl show? We put it in a vial. Then we put it in a baggie. Then we put it in a plastic container with a screw-on lid. Then we put it in a box, and we put that box in another box. And then we shipped it commercially via FedEx, so don't worry about it. At a Pentagon briefing 2 weeks ago, senior Pentagon officials said that the amounts of anthrax being shipped to laboratories for research purposes contained levels of anthrax that were significantly less than the amount needed to get an infected person healthy. An infected person healthy. Oh my God, it's Monday and my lights are out. And to infect a healthy person. And part of the issue is, though, it doesn't matter whether or not there were enough spores in that sample to infect a healthy person. All it matters is that there was one spore that was alive that allows anyone getting their hands on that to cultivate more anthrax. And that's one of the stories that we read last week. There is a big fear that that could absolutely happen. We also found out that there's no standards whatsoever for any of these facilities, for building them, for securing samples, for disposing of samples. There's no one group that's in charge of any of that. And that's just completely ludicrous. All right, where do we continue? So, yes, biopathogens on the warpath, under every bed. We also have the hackers, but wait, we'll get to the hackers. Remember, anytime that any of these never-before-seen diseases, or we saw on Friday, you know, rare, you know, very rarely seen ever in nature. We had that tuberculosis story with Dr. Sanjay Gupta the other day, talking about that woman who came over from India, got on a plane, flew 15 hours, then traveled to 3 states in the United States. Now she's in isolation with the National Institute of Health. That is a very rare form of tuberculosis that seems to be immune to most of the treatments that are out there for it. Well, wait, there's more, because now, all right, I'm connected. Now we also have a very rare deadly bacteria emerging on Florida beaches right in time for summer.
Alert now, the warm weather is bringing a rare bacteria back to Florida beaches, a deadly bacteria. It's linked to raw shellfish, but the bacteria somehow survives in salt water. ABC's Gloria Riviera with the details and with what you can do to stay safe.
And this is something we actually looked at last summer when this bacteria popped up. It's this flesh-eating disease. A guy died after having a sore on his leg, and he went into the water, and it got into his bloodstream, and it killed him. And I remember asking the question, what bacteria can live in salt water? I mean, doesn't salt water, like if you ever have some sort of mouth infection or an abscess tooth or anything like that, I mean, salt water or even a sore throat, salt water pretty much kills just about any little nasty. But this stuff lives in salt water.
Tonight, a worrisome and potentially fatal threat to beachgoers is back. Vibrio vulnificus, a rare bacteria Florida health officials say has already killed 2 people and infected 5 more in that state. In Biloxi, Mississippi, 25-year-old Jennifer McLeland lost her leg after becoming infected.
The doctor just woke me up and told me I didn't have a leg.
Health officials say the bacteria enters the bloodstream through open cuts or scrapes. It can also be contracted by eating undercooked shellfish. Jennifer, who beat leukemia as a child, had a small abrasion in between her toes. Wow. The bacteria thrives in warm seawater. Symptoms can include fever, chills, skin lesions, and even septic shock.
If you have an open wound or cut, child, adult should be aware that there's a risk associated.
It can be treated with antibiotics. Gloria Riviera, ABC News, Washington.
Well, good to know it can be treated by antibiotics. Wonder how five people died. I mean, that's just insane. Here, actually, there's one more. Let's hear this. This is from earlier yesterday.
The lagoon is home to diverse wildlife and home to naturally occurring invisible bacteria as well, called Vibrio vulnificus.
It's usually in brackish water or in salt water. So generally in our lagoon, that's where, you know, we worry the most about it.
One sink.
So I guess that's where it lives. I just never heard of pathogens living in salt water. I mean, I guess I never looked into it, but it just seemed odd to me because salt typically I had always believed would help kill anything like that bacterial.
Lucy County resident died last year from Vibrio. Another was infected just last month with the bacteria. J.J. Davidson told CBS 12 he got Vibrio at the Stewart Sandbar back in 2013, but was treated with antibiotics, and his flesh was not eaten away.
So if you get a wound, it doesn't eat your flesh. What it does do, though, it can cause a very severe wound that is blistering and looks terrible.
Once infected, the doctor would cut skin away, making it look scary like this, if you're lucky.
People die from Vibrio and maybe have to have an amputation.
There were only 32 infections in the state last year, and more than 93 million people hit our beaches and waterways, so your risk is low. But it is a higher risk now during warmer months. The second way you can get Vibrio, eating it. It's often found in raw shellfish like oysters, and the symptoms and blistering are the same.
If you go in the water, you have a wound, it starts to look nasty, get to the doctor immediately. Don't fool around.
Well, that's pretty frightening. I mean, I don't know. I went to Florida as a kid. No one ever mentioned, like, dying from going in the water with some crazy bacteria. And really, the first time I had heard about it was last year. I don't know. Maybe it's been around forever. But just look out. Anybody who's going down into Florida in the ocean, I guess pay attention and make sure you don't have any little scrapes on your leg. Like, that's hard to not have a scrape on your leg. It's pretty crazy. We also talked about bird flu. Bird flu is still raging. I have a clip here about farmers and consumers being hard hit by the bird flu. We had talked last week about, of course, we knew this was going to happen, egg prices going sky high. And now they're talking about even importing eggs from foreign countries. I believe the country they talked about was from the Netherlands. But who knows? The next, it could be Chinese eggs, right? Weren't we talking about shipping chickens over there to be culled and having them shipped back?
A major outbreak of bird flu is pushing the price of eggs toward record highs. We sent Adriana Diaz to Iowa, where farmers are suffering the most.
Our production is down about 60%.
Dave Reddick owns Rembrandt Enterprises in the heart of the country's egg-producing region. Reddick could only talk to us outside his Iowa facility because it's under quarantine.
So that fresh soil over there is the compost?
That is, yeah. So that's got the chickens that have been euthanized.
Reddick has already lost more than 8 million hens to bird flu in less than 4 weeks, resulting in tens of millions of dollars in losses and forcing hundreds of layoffs.
Oh, my God, there's a pit with just all these dead chickens laying in it. Oh, you know, we had started, I think, what we read a few weeks ago was 16 million. We heard that his farm had 8 million alone. The story we read at the very end of last week was up to 46 million birds now have been culled because of this in the United States. Of course, never worst ever outbreak on U.S. soil.
Nationwide, nearly 49 million birds in 21 states are now gone.
So now it's up to 49 million in 21 states. That's a lot of birds in a lot of states.
Reducing egg production by about 10%.
Is this the worst period you've ever experienced in this industry?
No, there's nothing that can come close to it. Absolutely nothing.
Scientists aren't sure how the virus is spreading, but Reddick calls it a tsunami that's rippling through the egg supply chain, from farms to food companies to truckers.
How much of your business depends on chickens?
At least 98%.
Lauren Bosma owns a trucking company that hauls for Rembrandt. Since bird flu hit, orders are down, cutting his revenue in half.
Do you think you're going to have to lay any employees off?
My goal is not, but right now I've got to look at the big picture once I know what the picture is. Everybody is probably going to have to cut back, but there could be some short-term layoffs.
The short supply has already driven up average prices by 17 cents a dozen, meaning the cost of the flu has spread from farm to table. Adriana Diaz, CBS News, Rembrandt, Iowa.
You know, and as we look at all this, as we look at the mega droughts happening in California, and they had to cull cows last year because they couldn't grow crops to feed them, and now 46 million birds being culled and not enough eggs, 21 states, it's rippling through the whole, not only food chain, but industry that backs up the farming industry from farm to table, the shipping companies, the, chicken pluckers. So now we're going to have to lay off. I mean, this is some major, major damage to the economy. And did you hear they said that they didn't know how this would happen? They don't know what's causing it. But don't worry, people, because we have these other foreign nations that we can have stuff shipped to us from. And while we were sleeping this weekend, there was a vote. House votes to remove country of origin labels on meat sold in the United States. Da, 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 da. It's getting us ready for the Tippa Pippa Sopa Popa. I don't know, Tippy and Pippy, the two trade deals, TPP and the TPIP. Is at least what I think. Don't worry about where your stuff came from. Don't worry if it's from Japan and it was irradiated, because you know what? We're shipping all that food out now. And there are countries that are complaining. Taiwan was one. I don't remember what the other one was. There was another Asian country that started getting radioactive imports of Japanese food, and they were screaming about it. We remember, back quite a number of years ago already, Japan was shipping out tea, and it was making its way through Canada and being relabeled as Canadian tea to sneak it into the United States. Once all of these trade deals pass, we don't need to know where our food came from. And if you remember, there was that Monsanto Protection Act that got inked a few years ago, and everyone was screaming about it, and then it expired. And they were like, phew, that was, a close call, because we almost didn't have choice over where our food came from or what was in it, because now, we can get labels again. Well, my old thing when that happened was the Monsanto Protection Act was just one little piece of this puzzle, and even by getting rid of it, or letting it expire, it's not going to protect us once these international trade agreements come into play, because we're not going to have a say as to what's in our food, and we're not even going to know as to what's in our food or where it comes from. All right, so anyway, let's read the story. This is actually out of the Wall Street Journal from the 10th. So this is what, Thursday, Wednesday? The House voted late Wednesday to remove country of origin labels on beef, pork, and chicken sold in the United States, hoping to prevent a protracted battle over the labels with Canada and Mexico. Huh. What are we fighting Canada and Mexico want labels? I don't know what that's about. Wednesday's 300-131 vote repealing the country of origin labels for meat follows a series of rulings by WHO, yes, the World Trade Organization, finding that, and listen to this, the labeling discriminates against animals imported from Canada and Mexico. So people, it's already starting. What, we have Canada and Mexico crying the blues because we're going to buy U.S.-raised beef, pork, or chicken before we buy foreign beef, pork, or chicken? Is that what it is? So now, guess what? Don't worry about it, because the House just voted, we'll fix it. Let's just make this the North American Union and get rid of all the labeling, and you just eat what we put into the grocery store. Canada and Mexico won a final World Trade Organization ruling in May and are now seeking retaliatory actions valued at a combined $3.7 billion a year. Guys, this is what these international trade agreements do. And we now have an international organization, the World Trade Organization, telling us that, you know what, you're discriminating against meat from these other countries. They have a retaliatory action combined. I wonder what they're going to do. Are they going to sue us? Oh, what? Canada has threatened trade restrictions on a range of U.S. products, including meat, wine, chocolate, jewelry, and furniture, unless we let their meat in. This is scary. I mean, I don't know. I really don't have anything against Canadian produce. I mean, I think Canada is a clean country. You know, their standards are up to par pretty much as ours are, which ours, I mean, look at the kind of standards we have here. Everything is, you know, butt patting, slapping, slippery palm sliding money, and it gets through. So, you know, it's just an illusion of safety between the FDA and the USDA here. But I don't know if I want to be eating shit from Mexico. I mean, yeah, Mexican strawberries, but, you know, how about China? You want to be eating Chinese pork? Because I know I don't. All right. Supporters of the House bill said a repeal of the labeling law. So there was a law that was on the books that they just repealed. A repeal of the labeling law is the only way to prevent retaliatory measures that could affect several U.S. industries. Oh, so we got to make sure we protect the corporation and not the people. Now, I had read something back, probably 6-8 months ago, too, that was pretty disturbing. You know, all of this food that comes in from these different countries into the United States, the USDA and the FDA are just so freaking overworked, and they don't have enough inspectors to look at anything. So they put the onus of safety on these other countries to check their food and make sure it was safe before it ever got here. I mean, I don't know about you, but I don't trust Indonesia's inspectors. Do you? This is just ludicrous. So all these industries that we're paying to quote unquote keep us safe, it appears from over the last few weeks of the shows that we've been doing, just looking at these headline stories, nobody's keeping us safe at all. And we're just paying all these salaries and freaking pensions and health insurance plans for government employees that include plastic surgery, where you could do anything and everything and screw up on your job and sit there and watch porn and no one's going to write you up for it. But they're not doing the job that they're paid to do. Where the fuck is corporate America saying you're fired? That's the way it works in the real world. Not just fantasy pretend I'm a federal fucking employee. I can't even believe how insane this is. You know, I didn't think I was going to be able to get pissed off over anything this morning. I guess I found the red button. All right. So I guess the country of origin labels had a real little snarky acronym called COOL. Yes, it's COOL. Quote, if COOL worked, perhaps there would be a response other than a repeal, said House Agriculture Committee Chairman Mike Conway of Texas, who sponsored the bill. That's interesting that it was a Texan that sponsored the bill to remove labels. But the fact that is COOL has been a marketing failure, he said. Country of origin labels were mandated by Congress in 2002 and 2008 farm bills and required meat packers to identify where the animals are born, raised, and slaughtered. Well, maybe that had something to do with mad cow, didn't it? During the days of Georgie Porgy Bush, because a lot of the countries wouldn't accept U.S. beef after they discovered mad cow. Didn't we also have an issue with foot and mouth disease in animals where we wouldn't allow imports from countries that had outbreaks of foot and mouth? But hey, guess that just doesn't matter anymore. back to the story. The information is then printed on meat packages sold in grocery stores. The labels aren't required either on meat sold in restaurants. I don't know, restaurants scare me. I try not to eat out just because there are all kinds of different rules and for GMOs as well as other things. And I worked in a restaurant for 10 years. You just don't want to know. In 2014, the U.S. imported more than 2 million head of cattle from Canada and Mexico and brought in nearly 5 million hogs from Canada. So there you go. That's why this Texas dude sponsored the bill. I'm sure he probably has investments in cattle in Texas that he's importing from Mexico. And he doesn't want to have to tell people that these cows in particular came from Mexico. He wants them to think that they're Texas cows. The House's vote in favor of the repeal moves the fight about origin labels to the Senate, where key members remain divided on the issue. Senate Agriculture Chairman Pat Robertson, Arkansas, has showed a strong interest in the repeal, but top Democrat Senator Debbie Stannenbaugh of Michigan said Wednesday that she will oppose the effort to get rid of them altogether. I plan on working with my Senate colleagues to develop legislation that ensures consumers have information about where their food comes from while also meeting our international trade obligations. Ding, 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 ding. I mean, they've seen, these are elected officials in this country, and they have seen the standing on the rooftops, people screaming that they want their food labeled. And even though Monsanto put bazillions of dollars behind the campaign to overturn a lot of these labeling laws, there are states, I believe, at least for GMO, Vermont was one, I thought, that got it through. People want to know organic and non-GMO is blossoming everywhere. People want to know what they're eating. So why would an elected official, and that vote in the House was 300 to 131. 300 assholes need to be fired in the House. 300 assholes are completely out of touch with the people who elected them. So it'll be very interesting to see what happens in the Senate, but I'm not going to hold my breath. They already said it was a marketing, quote-unquote, marketing failure. What about a safety failure? We're bowing down to international trade organizations and dropping our pants and letting whatever the freak some international organization says we should let into our country in? That is just absolutely beyond ludicrous. Give it up, people. It is becoming a one world. We are losing our own sovereignty. Canada and Mexico contend that labeling requirements put their cows and pigs at a disadvantage. Just isn't that the same quote that Monsanto had, right? By labeling it as GMO, people aren't going to want to buy that product. Well, I mean, isn't it the consumer's choice to make that decision? Not you hiding where it came from or what's in it, hoping to trick the uninformed consumer to purchase it? Anyway, we'll go back, read the sentence. Canada and Mexico contend that labeling requirements put their cows and pigs at a disadvantage, not because consumers snub their products, but because U.S. meat packers don't want to go through the hassle or expense of tracking imported animals. Ding, ding, ding. As a result, meat packers offer lower prices for hogs and cattle from Canada and Mexico. Consumer advocates, among the biggest supporters of labels, yes, deemed terrorists, say international trade deals should not trump customers' access to information about their food. You think? Quote, if Congress repeals the labels, then the next time consumers go shopping for a steak or a chicken for their family, they will not be able to tell where that product came from, said Chris Waldup, director of the Food Policy Institute at the Consumer Federation of America. That is completely unacceptable, he says. Consumers want more information about their food, not less. Hallelujah! I mean, I just can't even believe. I mean, think about it. Since Fukushima happened, one of the things that I've paid attention to is trying to find country of origin labels on rice, and you can't find it. So guess what? I don't eat rice anymore. And if I knew the chicken was coming from China, hell no, I'm not buying Chinese chicken. You know, that old thing that they pushed last year, and there was a little bit of pushback, but I don't think they ever repealed it. They inked an agreement with China to ship our chickens all the way over there, have them slaughtered and processed and packaged, and then they're going to ship them back here. Who the frick wants to eat something? I mean, even if it was done in the cleanest environment, China is probably, besides India, is one of the most polluted countries on the planet. Who the frick wants to eat their quote-unquote fresh meat that went across the ocean, came back again, and was processed in contaminated air with who the hell knows what? You know, slave labor throwing themselves off the fourth floor when they can't handle it anymore. It's just so disturbing to me. In a report to Congress in April, the Agriculture Department said the cost of putting country of, oh yes, the cost, just like the GMO labels again, oh my God, it's going to cost just so much. We're going to have to raise all the prices on food. So you know what? It's good for the consumer if we don't put GMO labels on the food. Well, hey, these guys are using the same argument in a report to Congress in April. The Agriculture Department said the cost of putting country of origin labels on meat outweighed the benefits. It found little evidence to suggest that consumers would buy more products with a U.S. label. Wait, is that how our entire manufacturing industry got sucked out of the country? People didn't want a Made in the USA label, so they said, screw it. Let's sign NAFTA and let it all go over the borders. I mean, I just don't get this. I think people absolutely would if they saw a label said made in the good U.S. of A, red, white, and blue, and one said made in Mexico. I mean, there might even, hey, make it an extra 20 cents for the U.S. meat or the U.S. product. I will guarantee you that there will be a large number of people that will buy the U.S. product just to make sure that they're guaranteeing U.S. jobs, which isn't a guarantee. But you know what I'm saying. Like, I just, this is such a ridiculous argument. And the Wall Street Journal putting out this garbage, and, you know, they made it sound like, oh, well, consumer advocates say. But, hey, they said there's no cost benefit. It's going to cost you too much. Puny thinking American. Go to Walmart and buy your Chinese chicken. Shut up and be happy. Andrew Bates, a spokesman for the Trade Representative Office, said the U.S. plans to object to Canada and Mexico's request for retaliatory action in the World Trade Organization. The trade organization is scheduled to consider the country's request on June 17th. Wow, so we still have the World Trade Organization is going to come after us if we continue to label country of origin on our food. An international organization telling you and me that we don't have any right to know where our fucking food comes from. Last paragraph, quote, Canada and Mexico did not provide any justification for their requests, but we would note that the annual values appear to be substantially inflated. And that was the 17 point, what was it? I thought it said retaliatory measures of 17 point something billion dollars. Oh, no. All right. Hallucinating on a Monday, 3.7 billion. But apparently there's no accounting spreadsheet that says that this is just some arbitrary number. So I guess we'll see. Pay attention to that one. That's a pretty frightening story. And if it doesn't get any more frightening than that, two more stories. If you were around in chat last night, I dropped these at some point. This is a story from the 9th, so this was Tuesday. If I can close all these pop-ups. Oh, Jesus. Subscribe to our newsletter. Not right now. Thank you. Click here to donate. Not right now. Thank you. Okay, Nation of Change. Monsanto proposes changing its name to escape its public relation woes. What? Yes. Documents released today, Tuesday. June 9th, 2015, by Syngenta, included a letter from Monsanto CEO Hugh Grant to Syngenta suggesting, as part of a corporate merger that they're working on, by the way, I guess Syngenta's holding out for more money, suggesting that as part of a corporate merger that, quote, we would also propose a new name for the combined company to reflect its unique global nature, unquote. Monsanto wants to escape its ugly history by ditching its name, said Gary Ruskin, co-director of U.S. Right to Know Consumer Group. This shows how desperate Monsanto is to escape criticism. Notice this is all happening while the classified trade agreements of Tippy and Pippy are being negotiated behind closed doors. They're getting this all lined up. This shows how desperate Monsanto is to escape criticism of its products, which raise environmental and health concerns, as well as concerns about corporate control of agriculture and our food system. Hey, imagine that. In a 2014 Harris poll, gauging the reputations of major corporations, Monsanto's reputation quotient ranked 58 out of 60. Yay! In other words, it is the third most hated company measured. Monsanto is much like Philip Morris when it changed its name to Altria, Ruskin said. Monsanto wants us to forget about its old scandals like PCBs and Agent Orange, as well as the serious questions swirling around Roundup and GMOs. U.S. Right to Know is a new nonprofit food organization that investigates and reports on what food companies don't want us to know. In January, U.S. Right to Know released a report titled Seedy Business on the agrochemical and food industry's PR campaign to defend GMOs. For more information on U.S. Right to Know, go to the website usrtk.org. So, I don't know, pay attention, keep an eye on Syngenta and Monsanto, and if that doesn't add insult to injury. There was one more story that came out of The Guardian. This was from Monday of last week. Monsanto plans to move their headquarters from the U.S. to the U.K. Monsanto, the U.S. seed and agrochemical group known for its genetically modified crops, wants to switch its headquarters from the U.S. to U.K. as a part of the complex merger deal designed to unlock tax savings for shareholders. And that's this deal with Syngenta. The group, which was founded in St. Louis, Missouri in 1901, is circling Swiss rival Syngenta with a so-called, quote, corporate inversion, unquote, proposal that would involve setting up a new company in the UK. Such inversions have been closely associated with aggressive tax planning, although sources close to Monsanto claim taxes are not the company's main motivation. Oh, what is it? Hiding? Syngenta on Monday rejected the proposal, which it values at $45 billion, claiming that Monsanto was offering, quote, the same inadequate price, unquote, as it had done in its approach in April. Under the terms of Monsanto's plan, investors in the Swiss company would end up with a holding of about 30% in the new company, with the U.S. firm's shareholders taking the rest. Syngenta shareholders would also receive some cash. Monsanto's been talking about a deal with Syngenta since April, but correspondence released by the Swiss company on Monday set out details of the U.S. firm's proposal for a new company, registering it in the U.K. A new parent company domiciled in the UK would demonstrate that our merger will create a new global enterprise and provide additional synergies, wrote Monsanto's chief executive Hugh Grant. We would also propose a new name for the combined company to reflect its unique global nature. Guys, they are setting to combine their efforts, double their arsenal, change their name, and come out fighting as all these international trade deals are signed. The UK has seen an influx of multinationals, among them Anon, Fiat Industrial, and Starbucks European, seeking tax advantages through the optimal location of often a small number of headquarters staff. The wave of companies establishing HQ in the UK follows the move by George Osborne to cut the headline corporation tax rate 20%, blah, 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 blah. The commercial difference between Monsanto's latest proposal to Syngenta and the plan put forward in April is a promise to pay the Swiss firm $2 billion should the deal be blocked by competition regulators. Well, there you go. I'm trying to think of what else I wanted to talk about. I wanted to talk about terrorists under every bed. We talked about pathogens under every bed again. And last week we talked about terrorists and hacking. We had the massive hacking of all, that's what all was, all federal employees had their information hacked. The IRS had been hacked just before that. We had all these financial institutions that have been hacked over the last few months. So now we find out, and I, you know what? I never thought, and I mean, yes, Snowden coming out, you know, everyone's like, oh, he's a hero. And if you guys remember back in that time period, the shows that we had some hot discussions because I didn't seem to think so. I thought Snowden was something that was kind of planned. I mean, we had known anything that Snowden released, we had already known, at least in the tech industry. We were called paranoid, but we knew that this was going on. There were always back doors and holes. But they've been releasing all these WikiLeaks documents, and Snowden had this hard drive with all of the data that he supposedly, quote-unquote, swiped from the NSA, encrypted. Well, when this hack happened at the IRS, and then it happened at the Federal Personnel Office last week, who did they turn around and point the finger at? Oh, the Russians, or oh, the Chinese. It's always the Russian or the Chinese hackers. Well, here, let's connect here, because look out, people. Now, Edward Snowden, before they can never charge him or anything, they said that he was putting people at risk, but guess what? Oh, I don't know. Can we not have to do this now? Hold on. Let's disconnect and reload. I can't stand that echo. I don't know. Worst case, we'll have to go to the other machine for the last 10 minutes. Go to before the first cup. Before the first cup. Yep, here we go. Okay, reconnect. All right, let's reconnect.
Shrinking parts of women's brains.
What? I think I must have audio on that's delayed somewhere. There we go. All right, let's try this again. That was hysterical. I don't know even what hell was talking about there. All right, let's try this again. Connect.
That you may want to
no!
check.
No, I'm sorry, hell. We love you, but I don't want to be rebroadcasting the show right in the middle of mine. All right, let's try this. The third time is a charm. Here we go. Do it again.
Russia and China have allegedly decrypted classified documents leaked by U.S. whistleblower Edward Snowden. The Sunday Times is reporting that Moscow and Beijing have gained access to a cache of classified files held by the former National Security Agency spy. The documents are said to contain details of spying techniques and could allow British and American spies to be identified.
Oh, no.
To the report, Western intelligence agencies, including Britain's MI6, have been forced to withdraw some of their agents from active operations. The top secret documents were released by Snowden back in June of 2013, before he was forced to flee the U.S. to avoid espionage charges. According to the documents, the NSA has been spying on millions of Americans and foreign nationals, as well as political leaders from around the world.
So I find it interesting that now...
Documents leaked by whistleblower Edward...
Jesus, it's one day. I find it interesting that now we are just off the hook having hack attacks left, right, and center, and we're blaming them on Russia and China. you know, Russia and China, the axis of evil. I'm surprised it wasn't Iran. But I think Iran, it's kind of out there. They're waiting to see how things go with Iran and this nuclear deal. Yeah. Mayor Ford, Chinese and the Russians and Israeli got the whole shop. They sure do. So what do we finish up the show with? I think we need to look at robots. There was a story that came out this morning about the future of robots and artificial intelligence. Of course, they're going to take all of our jobs. And guess what? They're going to keep us safe. Yes, they will. The robots will keep us safe. Hopefully this will work. This is not going to happen again. Oh, God, guys. I got to figure out where Hal's playing so I can use that other machine. I don't know. I don't know. Well, I don't know if I can. I don't know where Hal's playing, so I just have to wait for this one to load. All right, the future of robots and artificial intelligence.
It could turn out to be mankind's biggest technological leap forward.
Yes,
artificial intelligence, AI for short. Unless all the AI-endowed robots decide to take over for us someday. Our cover story is reported by David Pogue of Yahoo Tech.
For decades, Hollywood movies have taught us two things about robots. First, they'll someday walk on 2 feet like people. And second, most of them will eventually turn on us. But in real life, humanoid robots like we see in the movies have always seemed to be 20 years away. Well, don't look now. Last weekend, these robots competed in a competition run by DARPA. DARPA is the military's Advanced Technology Division. You may have heard of some of its previous projects. Self-driving cars, GPS, and a little thing called the internet. DARPA offered $3.5 million in prizes for robots that can navigate a disaster rescue scenario. With only intermittent remote control by a human operator, the robots have to perform tasks like driving, turning off a valve, drilling out a wall, crossing a pile of rubble, and climbing stairs. The crowd went wild.
It is an extraordinary thing, isn't it? When the robot does well and it scores a point, everyone cheers as if they're the ones that are getting the point. And then, of course, when the robot teeters and then suddenly falls, everybody goes, oh, and they sympathize with it.
Gil Pratt is the head of the DARPA Robotics Challenge.
These are still the Model Ts, and I think that in coming years, first of all, the most important thing is reliability will go up, prices will go down, and we'll find more and more use for this.
Just walk?
I can't believe these people are cheering on these hulking Atlas robots. Do they? And they're using these college kids, sprinkling. He said there was a $3 million prize, you know, dangling carrot, create us the next Terminator. It's just so bothersome to me that these kids don't see the future.
We just walk?
Yes, just walking is a major accomplishment.
And they're showing all these robots fall over. And of course, these are, you know, generation one, two, or three of robots. But don't think in the lab, you know, the fact that Google purchased 8 military robotics companies last year, and they wouldn't let a lot of those, any of those, actually. I don't remember. I thought Atlas they might have actually even pulled as well. They wouldn't let them be in the competition because, you know what? They're doing it all in secret.
We're still a long way from science fiction.
Just ask Russ Tedrick, the MIT professor who led MIT's robot in the DARPA competition.
Oh, yeah, good old MIT.
A robot has to actually sit in the passenger seat because he's too big to fit behind the driver's seat.
That would be this one.
Basically, it tried to drive while it was getting out of the car. It broke its wrist. It had to go through the rest of the competition with its right arm just dangling limp.
Even with a broken right arm, the robot finished the course one-handed, earning a respectable 7 out of 8 points.
Ding, ding, ding.
A few similar competitions have convinced the world that robots are capable of doing real things in the real world. That has led to massive new investments from Google, Apple, Uber, Qualcomm, you name it. And that's going to mean an acceleration of technology. Things are going to go really fast from here on out.
Yeah, they are. And, you know, we read a story last week or the week before about the self-healing robots. You know, major investment, and it's going to go really fast from here on out. Don't forget, everything is exponential.
You want to see something cool?
Alex Garland would agree. He's the writer-director of Ex Machina, a movie that considers what technology might be like just a little bit in the future. So it seems like thinking robots are all of a sudden a thing again this year in popular culture. Why do you suppose that's a resurgence all of a sudden?
Why has that happened? I don't know. I've thought about it quite a lot. And I think it may not actually be to do with AI in some respects. I think it's more to do with technology and a fear of technology.
Do you have a name?
Yes. Ava.
We all have cell phones and we all have tablets and laptops and computers. And we don't really understand how these things work. But they seem to understand how we work. And that makes us feel uneasy.
Do you want to be my friend?
Of course.
Will it be possible?
Why would it not be? Most movies where there's a very smart robot like yours turn out to be menacing or threatening in some way, if the robot indeed does not turn out to be pure evil.
Actually, in the case of this film, Ex Machina, I don't think the robot is evil. What I think is that the robot is like us. It's sentient. And that robot...
Well, sentient robot sounds pretty frightening to me. All right, guys, 10 seconds left in the show. It is Monday. We made it through the first show of the day. Make sure you guys stick around. We have Hal's Replay up next. At 6 o'clock, Coachella Effect Rewind, Unlock the Door with Michael Cross at 8, Truth on the Tracks, Brand New with Brandon at 9, United Front at 10, and Indonesia.